fellow griever. You have found the Leftover Pieces Suicide Loss Conversations podcast, and I am Melissa, your host. I am with you on this journey because my 21-year-old son, Alex, died by suicide on August 7th of 2016. Since launching this podcast in late 2020, I have followed my heart and expanded the Leftover Pieces to include books and an online community where I host Zoom support groups every week. It is there, in this community, that I lead other parents who have lost a child by suicide from survival toward hope and into healing. The website is also a resource hub, a connecting point for all survivors of suicide loss. You can find me, ways to connect with me, and links to everything that I'm doing in the community on my website, theleftoverpieces.com. Know that I'm always open to suggestions and feedback. And if you know someone that I should connect with to be on the podcast, please let me know that as well. So now, I invite you to join me for real conversations, candid talk on hard topics surrounding the loss of our loved ones by suicide. I talk to other loss survivors, mental health experts, advocates, and on alternate weeks, I offer shorter solo episodes where I go down the rabbit hole to discuss things that have been on my mind or possibly parts of my journey that I feel would be beneficial to share. Every week, we explore the questions that haunt us, seek the courage to uncover the healing tools within us, and offer the comfort of a community that we all need so very much. It's true that our hearts and lives have been shattered, but come along with me, and together, let's choose to find meaning and even happiness amid the leftover pieces before us. Welcome. Before we start this episode today, I want to take just a quick minute to share something very exciting with you. I am going to be hosting a transformational healing retreat this summer. Yes, just months from now. This retreat is curated specifically for moms who have lost their child to suicide. Do you or a mom you know need to get away, clear your head, care for your heart, partake in transformational healing modalities, connect with other moms, and all the while, feel the tropical sun on your face? I would encourage you to go to my website now, click on the very top teal bar, or scroll midway down to my page and click there to learn all about why Casa Alterna Vida is a house of transformation, why I chose to host my retreat there, and why you should consider joining us. There are limited spaces, so go take a look today. It would be my honor to hold space for you here in sunny Puerto Rico, because while this journey is lonely, you do not have to be alone. Hello, fellow griever, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 12 of the Leftover Pieces Suicide Loss Conversations podcast. And today, the guest that I'm having a conversation with is Yancey Wright. He's the director, owner, and facilitator at Casa Alterna Vida, a house of transformation healing resort here in sunny Puerto Rico in the Caribbean. And for those of you that don't know, that is now my home as well. I now live in Puerto Rico. And this was not necessarily on my agenda to host a retreat this year. It was on my agenda to do it at some point, but the opportunity has presented itself and I have learned not to ignore signs or nudges. And everything about this retreat speaks to my heart and soul as something that needs to be provided. This retreat is for moms who have lost a child by suicide. However, if that is not you, this is still going to be a very valuable episode to listen to. Yancey has amazing insight and tips. He has a lot of training. He's an amazing sought-after retreat host, not only in his own center, but in others. And this is going to be a phenomenal conversation to listen to because, again, even if you're not a mom who wants to attend this retreat that we're talking about, he speaks directly to what else he offers and what he does. And it can be anything from signing up for another retreat that he holds to creating or customizing one of your own with him. He also has dates that he opens up the center for people to book individual times to stay in one of these rooms and experience their own healing if they choose to do that as well. So I think you'll take a lot. I think you'll want to stay tuned to the very end and hear him talk about his suggestion and to hear him and I dialogue through one of the suggested exercises that he recommends, especially for people like lost survivors. And I really loved the suggestion, so I hope you'll listen all the way to the end. We do cover what's going to be included in this retreat, but we also spend about the first half of our conversation talking specifically about Casa Alterna Vida, how it came to be, what it's there for, his own personal experience. And I think so much of what we talk about is going to speak to so many of you, not only from the space of your loss, but from the space of being a human in this extremely stressed out world that we all live in. And because of that, I know that there'll be takeaways for everybody that chooses to listen to the episode. Be sure that you check the show notes to this episode for all of the details and any links that you need, not only to my website, but to Yancey's as well. And I just want to take a moment here and do a quick introduction before we welcome him. Yancey is the owner and founder of Casa Alterna Vida. He is a master facilitator, a somatic healer, and has a wealth of knowledge around retreat planning, nature guiding, and conscious communication. He's a seasoned nature guide and has an abundance of knowledge and passion for the local flora and fauna here in Puerto Rico. And he will tell us many of the other qualifications he brings to the table. And so without further ado, I'm going to dive into this conversation and welcome Yancey Wright. Well, hi, Yancey. Welcome to the podcast. I really appreciate you being willing to come on and discuss Casa Alterna Vida and what you do there and your background with it. Welcome.
Thank you, Melissa. Thanks for having me here.
And I'm looking forward to the retreat in a few months, so I'm excited to dive into this and talk about it. I'd like to start with you sharing with everybody that's listening why you're here, which basically would mean your background. I'd love you to share your experience into why you got into the healing modalities and holding retreats, but also speak to why you understand how important it is to heal from a loss and what a loss, a deep traumatic loss, how it can affect us, and then how that lends to finding ways to heal.
All right. So why I'm here is interesting because I experienced a near loss of myself that prompted a wake-up call. So if any of the listeners have ever had a career burnout, that's what I went through. And as with most men in the world, we tend to not think anything needs fixed until something breaks. And so in my case, I was in the ICU and the doctor handed me a sheet of paper. She said, I need you to sign here. We're going to have to stop your heart and it may not restart. And we want you to hold us liable. And I sort of chuckled and was like, how am I going to hold you liable if I'm dead? But in reality, the situation happened fairly quick. My heart was stuck in atrial fibrillation and there were some other complications. They had to shock my heart with a defibrillator 3 times. And so that was the beginning of a wake-up call for me, where in that same month afterwards, post-ICU experience, I had about 3 months of very difficult breathing issues where I couldn't even go up a flight of stairs. And granted, I'm a super active person, so that was was scary for me to recognize how vulnerable my heart was and how the stress I had been creating for myself and really the internal blame and self-criticism that was resulting in a burnout for myself. So the other thing that occurred was like the shortness of breath. I think it was from the anesthesia. I'm still not really sure, but it lasted about 3 months. But during that time period, I lost two loved ones as well. So I lost my grandmother, who I was super close to. I actually moved out of my parents' house when I was young and lived with her my last few years of high school to finish my own schooling. And so I was super close to her. I lost her to cancer, and I was asked to do the eulogy. That was probably one of the hardest public speaking engagements I had done to date at that time. And then during that memorial, my aunt came up to me and said, "Hey, I want you to do my eulogy." And that was hard because she had been the closest aunt I had growing up. She wasn't a blood relative, but her son was my age and we were still friends and we went to school together. And so I was always at their house, and she had cancer. And so she passed a few months after that. And the combination of me realizing my own vulnerability as a human being, like putting so much pressure and pushing, and then losing loved ones, caused me to say, wow, what do I want to do different? And so I came to a couple of realizations. I thought, if my life is short, then I want to do something. I was already doing something fairly meaningful and purpose-driven. I was a director of sustainability in the green building industry and helped a lot of big companies reduce their environmental impact. So that was great, but I was also just burning myself out. So I had this vision of creating a place and space where people could connect to themselves, connect to nature in a deeply and profound way, and learn conscious communication skills that would help reduce stress, overwhelm, and anxiety. Basically, I was designing a place for someone like me and others that are experiencing loss. We've had a lot of different guests over the last 3 years, but we've had folks that come to us because they've lost their job, or they've lost their passion, or they've had a burnout, or they've lost a loved one, or if they've lost some other idea that they've had to let go of and transition through. So we've had a lot of guests for that, but then I also facilitate quite a few corporate team building retreats and leadership retreats. Again, helping leaders get more in tune with their emotional intelligence, to feel their feelings, to connect with nature in ways that there's so much that we have to learn from these complex ecosystems that can teach us how to move through life, whether it's just looking at life and death in nature, or looking at so many ways in which leaders can start to give themselves more patience and give themselves a little more grace. So that's how I ended up creating Casa Alternavida. The vision came through maybe 10 or 11 years ago, finally got it built after, hurricanes and pandemics and all that that kept slowing us down or shutting us down. So we officially opened a little over 3 years ago, and we've had a really amazing group, series of people through. And it's helped me grow. During the opening process, I actually lost my mom. I was taking care of her. She had pancreas cancer. And that was after my grandmother. That was by far the hardest thing, is supporting her through her end of life, even through her last breaths. And just for whatever reason attracted a lot of people that have experienced loss. They had lost loved ones. So I had, for at least 6 to 8 months, it was also right as the pandemic was ending, we had a lot of guests experiencing loss of loved ones. So that's a long introduction to why I created what we've created here. It was an old abandoned structure that we took through a transformation process that resembles a lot of the transformation process that people go through. I know that creating a space that feels like a home environment that automatically helps people feel at ease, so they can experience their emotions, so that they can really eat healthy, do some movement, and be surrounded by a team that's genuinely authentic and loving and supportive. That's been the vision, and it's taken some time to get that team in place. And now we have that space, we have that team. And so when people like you, Melissa, come to us and say, "Hey, I want to do this unique specialized retreat," then it's what we love. It's what we love. It may not be what we do all the time. And it's important. It's important to our community, important to people in the world to be supported in that way. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And thank you, first of all, for sharing that. Thank you for sharing your lost stories, because I know firsthand that even though it's happened to us and it's a part of our own story, it doesn't make it easy to talk about. So thank you for your vulnerability and sharing about the losses of your aunt and your mom and your dear grandma. I feel for you. I understand completely how much that can impact us. And you touched on several things, which we can unpack a little bit, but you talked about healing after loss is obviously a thing when people experience a significant loss in their life, whether that's the loss of a person, a job, an idea, fill in the blank, they need to heal. But then there's also the side that you touched base on, which was the side as a man and having faced career burnout, mental health exhaustion, mental health turmoil, that when you were in that bad of physical health, that was obviously a manifestation, a lot of what was going on inside of you, right? You were carrying things around, you were keeping it to yourself, doing what men are trained to do in our society, which is buck up and deal with it. So at that moment, I was seeing the opposite sides of the scale as far as the vast need for places like Casa Alterna Vida, because while I have been called to work with people after loss, after suicide loss, I also understand the companion and the parallel side of that, which is the side of people working in advocacy and trying to promote better mental health so that we have less people die in this way, because it's becoming one of the leading causes of death in our country in many age groups. And some, it's now the leading cause, which should never be a thing. And so now that we're losing, especially men, at a rate that is unbelievable to suicide, that's losing people to their mental health. That's losing people to the illness that occurs inside of it, the dis-ease, the disease that occurs inside of us when we don't take care of ourselves and we allow ourselves to burn out and all the things. So knowing that Casa Alterna Vida, places like this, can be there on both sides of that, that ideally if people are coming to see you when they are experiencing burnout or when they've had a traumatic loss and they know that they need to get on the other side of that from a health and wellness standpoint, that just helps create a cycle of better, healthy people, which then means ultimately for those of us that have lost someone to suicide, we know that then that can contribute to decreasing the suicide rate. And so talk a little bit about how you dove into your own mindset, if you will, that if you didn't do something different, because I do want to speak to that side of it briefly with my listeners. And then I want to go into the retreat side for healing after loss. But there are people listening that not only are experiencing those things themselves, but they know people that are, and everybody that's listening didn't lose somebody directly to suicide. So I think it's really relevant to talk about mental health, and you can speak at it from the standpoint of being a male, men's mental health, of how important it is to recognize it before the disease, whatever disease that presents itself, has manifested to a point that it may not be curable.
Yeah, that's an important discussion topic, Melissa. I'll share my experience. I recognize it's not the same as a loss due to suicide, and I believe some of the mental health components may be relevant. In my burnout experience, the thing that I was unconscious of was how much I was being stuck in a blame and victim mindset. I was feeling at the effect of everything around me. I was blaming my coworkers, blaming people, feeling like they weren't doing enough, moving fast enough, working hard enough. And that was really coming from my own internal driver, my inner critic. And that was starting to spill out in unhealthy ways. And so when things weren't going as I had hoped, then I was feeling more of a victim mindset and slipping between victim and blame. So I would refer to that as being below the line in the mindset overall. And then after my burnout and then leaving my career, I took some time to slowly phase myself out. But after leaving my career, I started jumping more into different coaching modalities. So I'm a resilience coach through the Heart Math Institute. It's 25 years of science behind heart intelligence. And then I also spent quite a bit of time going through coaching programs at the Hendrix Institute in California. That's Gay and Kathleen Hendrix. And they've spent their lives writing books. They've come from sort of the traditional psychology world, realized a lot of talk therapy wasn't very effective. And so they've been focused on somatic body-based work, getting people out of their heads and into their body intelligence in how to create loving and thriving relationships with themselves and with others. And so going through some of their trainings, then I decided I wanted to become a coach through their program. That took a few years. And then after Hurricane Irma and Maria hit Puerto Rico and slowed down the construction process on the project here, I jumped into their two-year intensive program. And that program is called the Leadership and Transformation Program. And that really helped change my life. That's where a lot of these concepts of shifting my mindset out of a blame or victim mindset started to go even deeper. And I learned their coaching programs aren't about so much how to coach others. It's really about how to unravel your own stuff and go deep into group coaching format where you're learning and challenging and even being triggered by each other and learning how to work through those triggers and understanding the behind the scenes, all the unconscious things that tend to come up. So you asked about my pathway of understanding these mindsets and how to recognize when burnout happens or mental health issues happen. For me, I didn't realize I was burnt out until after I was already burnt. It was this kind of regretting getting up in the mornings, which is hard for me. Usually I'm super motivated. It was really this sort of negative, pessimistic mindset. I stopped the self-care practices of going to the gym regularly because in my mind, I just kept saying to myself, I don't have enough time. I wasn't getting very good sleep. I was starting to wake up at 3 a.m. in the morning, maybe only getting 5 hours of sleep because I just had too many things going on in my head, worries. And I think the combination of all those that then start to lead to disease. And specifically, I think the biggest foundation is the inability to express emotions or move emotions on. For me, it was a lot around like anger, but also fear. And that's super hard for men to acknowledge, is that it's often a fear fight that we go into. And I don't mean to just profile this as men or women, but it's a very common kind of societal thing of like, I'm not afraid.
Right.
So it's that fear fight that comes across as potentially being anger. So the root of most of what was going on for me was fear of failure, fear of not being good enough. And even deeper underneath that was fear of not being lovable. So there was a lot that I got to unravel over the next still unraveling. I would say that conscious leadership and conscious communication are things that are ongoing practice of just being in tune with and curious and trying to stay above the line in that curiosity as long as possible. So I believe that answers your question.
It does. And the crossover between so much of this is, I mean, it's not amazing to me, but yet it still is, because to hear you talking about the blame and victim mindset, I'll just speak to mothers for just a minute. Most mothers, and I would say a lot of immediate family members of suicide loss, get really mired in the muck of the blame. I call it the blame and shame game a lot, but it's the same as the victim mentality, right? Where because fear is at the control board of trauma, you're talking about the same kind of emotions. And so a lot of suicide loss grievers, especially the parents and or the siblings, the people that were the closest to this person in life, which could sometimes be somebody else, right? We have chosen family as well in life. But when we lose somebody that close to us, we have all of these pervading emotions that you talked about, because it has shaken loose all of the stuff. I often talk to people about how it's like, it's not like somebody just shook a tree. When you have a loss of this kind, it's akin to a tectonic shift in the plates of your life, if you will. And when there's a tectonic shift in the earth, it doesn't just shift and then go back into place. It shifts, and now you have a new environment. And you have to learn to live around that chasm and what that looks like. And so then your life is then about seeing oh, what's over on the other side may not be the same as it used to be. And we now have to look at rewriting our whole person and rewriting our whole self. And which means we have to lean into that loss and figure out how to heal from that trauma. But you brought up something interesting because you were talking about, I'm trying to think exactly what you were talking about when you did, but it made me think about going, you talked about the how you thought it was one thing and then it really was another because of how our mindsets are. But when I went into one of my biggest breakthroughs in my healing, the healing of my trauma, not the grief part, but the healing of my trauma, was when 3.5 years in to the loss of my son, I had a minor stroke. I had stored up so much toxic energy in my body because I was doing the only thing I had ever known how to do in my life to that point, which was pull myself up by my bootstraps and pretend to go on. But this loss had literally shattered me at my core. And at that point, my body was responding to it. And so then my wake-up call was realizing I'd never had a cholesterol problem in my life. I had never had a blood pressure problem in my life. And upon having that stroke, I went into the doctor, of course, and found out that I had through the roof cholesterol, through the roof blood pressure issues. I'm no longer on medication, but for a while I was on medication for both of those because the numbers were so high and my blood pressure was so high. And I'd always had low blood pressure. So this had all manifested through me storing this grief and all of the trauma that comes with it inside of my body. And I went from a place of feeling defeated and like this was actually going to claim my life too. And by that, most of my listeners know it doesn't mean I was necessarily suicidal, although there was a few brief moments that I actually did feel that way. But for the most part, it just physically felt like it was going to claim me. And then that stroke told me that it could. That minor stroke told me, based on all the research that I did afterwards, that my likelihood of having a big stroke, a big event, was greatly increased now. And the next 5 minutes to 5 years were going to be super important. So it kicked me into gear and I started a bunch of different things, everything from diet to movement to looking into energy centers and all the things. But I also invested in my subconscious. I also went into an intensive NLP program with a neuro-linguistic practitioner to work specifically. And I thought I was going into work on being stuck because I decided I was stuck in my grief somehow. And I loosely put those in air quotes because grief is something we have to learn to live with. We need to learn to live with it healthily, but we aren't stuck in the way that we're going to somehow unstick and it's going to be never there again. But that's what I felt. That was the only thing I could verbalize to her, Yancey, was I feel stuck in my grief. I feel stuck in this journey and I need to unstick. Well, what we really peeled back was that kind of like you touched base on of where you really were versus where you thought you were was my underlying trauma. The trauma that I just had with Alex was so great that it broke open all the other stuff. And it really came down to not feeling good enough, right? I didn't feel like I was enough in this world. I wasn't enough to do the work I wanted to do to help others. I wasn't enough to get myself into a good place. And it tied back to childhood stuff, right? But I did the work and unlocked all of the things that really mattered. And that's what you're speaking to as far as the work that can be done at Casa Alterna Vida to help jumpstart these practices that are going to help us understand how, like you said, I started the Leftover Pieces, this podcast, over 3 years ago as a response to the podcast I needed. I couldn't find the one I needed. So one day I said, I'm going to create what I can't find. And that's what's led me in everything I do with Leftover Pieces. And just like you said, ultimately what you learned to do was heal yourself and learn to apply and practice the things that you needed. I come from that same standpoint. And I think most people that are experiencing the need to heal do the same thing. So it's about giving them tools. It's not about when they come to your center, they're not going to have hands laid on them, and then they walk away and they're miraculously cured. This is about giving us tools to live on this earth, to live in this body, to live in a way that is healthier and more whole and more mindful, and to set a foundation for that. And if I misspoke in any way, I'd love you to correct that. But I feel like that's what you've said, was that this is a good place to start because of all of the training and coaching and the staff that you have. Speak a little bit to what Casa Alterna Vida can bring to somebody's life to get them started in the right direction.
No, you're spot on. It's really about us creating a safe space, a container for people to show up as they are, to explore the depths of their emotions with support of this physical space, support of the natural environment and your support, as well as the support of the team. We're very in tune with the processes that people go through. So we design our food to support those processes. The chef is constantly tracking and paying attention to where people are at, and he'll change things up based on what they need. If they need a little more grounding, he'll bring in more root vegetables. If they need something a little bit lighter, then he'll just adapt and adjust. The space itself, I actually have quartz crystals that are 8 inches long that I embedded inside the concrete they're all at the same height and they point to each other. They create an invisible grid of love and protection. That may sound a little woo, and it is. And so I use that for a couple of things. One, I actually installed them early on in the construction process to set the vibration of the space. Two, I tune into each crystal every morning in my meditation to recalibrate and to enhance the vibration of that invisible grid of love and protection. So there's intention. We don't just clean rooms, we clear the energy of rooms. So there's a lot of intention that goes into everything that we do to support the process that your guests will be going, that they'll be going through. And yeah, that's what we do. Is with you, we can provide tools and resources, share our own stories, and be an example of in a lot of ways, the example of moving through the grieving process. I hesitate because it is not the same as a loss to someone from suicide, and we can do our best to support from our own experiences.
Yeah, I love that. And I just want to speak really briefly to the fact that when I decided to embark on this part of my journey with the leftover pieces, for the last few years, I have been being asked if I was going to do a retreat. It was something that was desired, right? A lot of us that have experienced a loss in life sometimes decide we need to look for something to take care of ourselves or something to help answer questions that we can't seem to answer. And what do I do now? That kind of thing. And so a lot of times we will seek out this kind of thing. And so it wasn't strange to me that I was being asked, but it was not something that was within my bandwidth and capabilities at the time to do. So when I found myself at this point in my own personal journey, being able to finally relocate to an island in the Caribbean, and it's surprising to me that I even felt led as quickly as I did once I was here, because it wasn't necessarily on some checklist, Yancey, of as soon as I get to Puerto Rico, go find a retreat center. I was literally in my month of my own personal transition where I allowed myself to work at a very minimal level, need to keep basic things going. I still met with my support groups and things, but I wasn't clocking in and out to work every day as far as sitting at my desk. I gave myself the whole month of January to get here and get settled. And for some reason in that month, I just felt led to look up and see what was here on the island retreat-wise. And at that time, in full disclosure, I was thinking that at some point in the future, this year or next year, I would put together a retreat myself, that I would go rent some big VRBO or whatever and put the retreat together myself. Yes, I would have to find a massage therapist. I knew I had the ability to do the food. I have an extensive event planning background as an executive chef. So I thought I can do this, but I also knew it was going to take a lot of lift from me when it was time to do it from a time and bandwidth standpoint. So I knew that it wasn't going to be on the agenda right away. But so out of curiosity, I just felt led one day to look, and multiple centers came up. There's more than one retreat center in Puerto Rico. And for some reason, it was almost like yours just kept flashing at me that I just needed to check yours out. And I'd been on the other websites. And you and I talked after I contacted you. And then I made an appointment to go to the center. And I can't even tell people enough how I left that day. And I think I told you while I was there, if I could have dreamt up my own retreat center, it would be pretty darn close to what you've put together here. I don't have the background you have. I don't have all those things. So that's not on my agenda. I'm not going to start a leftover pieces retreat center, But it took off of my plate immediately that thought that I had to do this myself. I suddenly realized that what I could bring to moms that are looking to find a healing retreat by partnering with, and I shouldn't say partnering, you're doing all the work, by being a host at a retreat center like yours, that it just suddenly was like, of course, this is absolutely what I need to do, because then the lift for me is small. I can pass on and to you all to do the heavy lifting, if you will, and I get to come alongside of you to help maybe fine tune for this retreat what's needed, but not to provide all of the different things, not to be the person making sure the beds are clean and the energy is cleared and all the things that your amazing staff is going to do for the guests at my retreat. And it just was automatically where I went, I need to do this, and I need to do this sooner than later. So for people listening, this wasn't necessarily on the agenda. It truly happened the way I have allowed everything to happen in leftover pieces, which is it just presented itself in an organic way. And instead of doing what the old me would have done and maybe go, oh yeah, but the time isn't right, or overguess it, I went with it. I leaned into it. It felt right. And all the doors have opened greatly since then. And I feel like this is just the beginning of me being able to hold really amazing healing spaces here on this beautiful island that I now call home, and to be able to turn to you as that place that can happen feels Melissa, amazing. Yeah.
I do see it as a partnership. It's a co-creation, and we get to co-create an amazing experience for your guests because you have a vision in how you want to take people through an arc of an experience. And through that collaboration, we get to co-create that. So I appreciate this opportunity to create that experience for your guests.
Well, and you were, and it's important that people hear, it's important to me that people hear the fact that right away you were extremely receptive to understanding how prevalent loss is in our society and how you have seen, especially over the years since you've opened, we've had great loss in this world. And that's from everything from the pandemic to obviously cancer to seeing the suicide rate climb to where it is. And you immediately said there's such a need for this. And like I said, I know you do corporate retreats and those types of things as well. But I could immediately see in your heart how relevant having grievers come to your center was for you, which spoke to me greatly as well. And I appreciate the ability to be able to not just say, click, I'm going to order this package, and then you and I don't talk, and they come and have a retreat experience, which will probably be great. But you do lean into your hosts and say, let's create a custom experience for your group, which is half the reason that this spoke to me the way it did. If I had to just check a box and say, I want retreat number two, and then we never spoke again and we just showed up, it would probably be an amazing retreat, but it wouldn't necessarily be the same experience, the same healing experience that they're going to get with this tailored. So that's what I'd like to shift into the leftover pieces, the picking up the pieces retreat that we are doing in July, and what the moms that do come, and at this point it is moms, whether I would ever do other groups or not, I'm sure I'll get emails about. I'm leaving that to whether that is right for me at some point in the future. But at this point, all the work I do inside of the leftover pieces is for moms. And so that's what this is, for mothers that have lost children to suicide, so that they can come together for the purpose of they want to learn how to breathe. They want to, meaning literally, physically and emotionally, learn how to breathe again. They want to learn how to refocus. They want to be refreshed. They want tools. They want to leave hopeful. So, and I think I said it, but they want to connect with each other, which is a huge survival piece of this after the loss, is being able to have someone to relate to directly. So speak to what they're going to get on a basic level from this retreat. Walk us through maybe just what an example of a day is going to look like for this retreat.
Yeah, there's some subtlety in the formula that we found really works. And that formula is starting with a baseline, like absolute what is necessary for self-care for anyone going through the grieving process. And it's not just for people going through the grieving process. This is basic for anyone in general that hasn't been doing a good job of holistic self-care. So In the mornings, we usually start with a movement class up on the rooftop. That's about 7:30. The sun's already come up at that time or starting to come up. And that rooftop location is overlooking the National Rainforest. You can also see the ocean on the other side, but it's about giving perspective and helping you tune into your body and really connect in a way that is appreciative, because so often we just get up, we're all in our heads, and we just push our bodies to go do things all day instead of starting with taking care of it, because it's the thing that's actually holding that brilliant head on into place. So it's usually restorative movement. It's not anything fancy. We call it mindful movement, but it's technically a restorative yoga with bolsters and supportive movement processes. So then after that, we'll have a healthy breakfast. It could be maybe some gluten-free waffles. Everything that we provide as far as food goes is a low inflammation diet. We don't have any gluten in the house. There's no refined sugar in the house. There's no traditional dairy. We might have a little bit of grass-fed butter, but in general, we don't have anything that's non-organic. Everything we do, even though it takes a lot of time, as you've probably been realizing, it's a lot of effort to find organic items on the island, but we have deliveries from a couple of local farms that happen a couple times a week. So your breakfast is going to be a wholesome breakfast. And then after that, there's, for your retreat, it's a little different, but we'll still have at least a nature adventure. So we'll then take you into nature. We have the National Rainforest just a few minutes away. We also have some beaches just a few minutes away. And we find that's super important to connect to our roots, like no pun intended, but to do some earthing, get your bare feet out and feel the land and connect to the essence of this beautiful island in a way that really helps support your immune system and helps open your heart and to just be present for yourself and as well connecting to each other. And then after that nature adventure, we would typically bring you back, have a wholesome lunch, a very gracious lunch at that point. And then after lunch, we typically schedule in a little bit of time to reflect, to nap, to relax, read. Sometimes that's when massages get scheduled. We do intuitive therapeutic massage work. So it's more about dialing in and giving attention to the areas of your body that really are holding on to emotions. And I know that you're planning on doing some work around emotional releases. So that combined with the hands-on touch work can tend to provide a lot of support. So after that kind of rest, relaxation, massage time, we will typically take guests to the beach in the afternoon, also for some more time to connect to nature, put your feet in the sand, put your feet in the warm ocean water, maybe get into the waves, maybe work with the waves to move some emotions, process. The waves and nature in general are extremely supportive to helping move energy on, because if emotions are energy in motion, it's a real key to take time and put the effort towards like continuing to move those. Then it creates space for other things, other possibilities to happen. Also tends to relieve some of the pressure we carry in our bodies, tension in our bodies. So after that, we'd come back for some time for you to take your showers and get ready for dinner at 7. And then we'll have a nice multi-course meal for dinner. And then after that, there's some time typically that people spend up on the rooftop under the stars. If the moon's out, then under the moon. Just having some informal conversations, connecting, relaxing. And then we'd get to repeat the same thing the next day, just different locations.
Yeah. And I know, and so you're exactly right. So that's a good basic overview. And we are going to customize pieces of it that fit with this retreat. For grievers, there'll be pieces, a few pieces that I do, that some of which I'm going to keep somewhat as a surprise to the people that are coming. They'll get it as part of their agenda closer to the retreat. But one of the things we have chosen, or I have chosen, but we chose together to put into mine retreat, is a fire ceremony. Talk about the healing power of fire in general and why, because I know there are other ceremonies I could have chosen, and there will be probably part of our nature adventures. You said there's kind of ceremonial type pieces to that, but this fire ceremony is going to actually be facilitated as a ceremony. Talk to me about the fire ceremony and why fire is such an important element in release.
Yeah, I find that, including myself, I've been unconscious about what I'm using to fuel my inner fire. So that unconscious fuel of anger or fear fight can often fuel a fire that generates results that are not enjoyable. They're not creating results that give me pleasure or joy. So the fire ceremony is really about a creative process of becoming more conscious around the ways in which we're showing up unconsciously and the ways in which we might be creating an experience for ourselves that aren't optimal or ideal. And then creating through another process, a deeper level of intention about what it is you really want to create. So the fire is about like understanding your inner fire. We're going to create some beautiful things, a list of a lot of things of that we don't, that aren't serving us. And we'll burn those things and visually use the fire to let them go and visually use that fire to help visualize a new way of igniting purpose and passion within us and igniting a different sense of joy and compassion for ourselves so that it's more of a ceremony, but also a visualization, body-based visualization. We'll do some interactive things that hopefully will support a mindset shift so that you can release and let go of the items that are no longer serving.
Yeah, I love that. And I know that there's various ways that can happen, but in looking at the options that were given, I immediately gravitated to the fire ceremony. So I've learned to trust that instinct. I know some of it comes from the fact that I'm a Sagittarius, so I'm grounded in fire as an element anyway. And I tend to be a much more fiery type person, but I understand the fire element with what you said, which is the anger piece and the release of that and the how we handle that at our base. And even though, especially moms, I hear them say what I said for years, which is, I'm not angry at my child. I'm not angry at my child. Because when you experience this loss, you come to understand that many people are angry about it. And there's something with a mom that's already experiencing this immense guilt, the shame, the unknowns, that the being able to admit that they're carrying anger is really hard. Because I wasn't angry at Alex either. And I kept saying, I'm just not angry. I'm not angry. It took years. It took the stroke. It took all the things for me to realize that in many ways, anger, which we could call fear, we could call it, was at the heart of what I was experiencing. I needed to really get down and realize that just because I had anger didn't mean I had any blame associated with Alex and that I didn't hold him responsible, but that I still was angry, that I was still carrying that emotion of anger, which really, like I said, walks a fine line between masquerading as is fear, anger, fear, right? We have to wonder which one is which sometimes. And so I just felt the fire ceremony was going to be really powerful in this loss situation that we're dealing with versus some of the other options.
It's not often the anger at others. It's often the anger that we carry towards ourselves that we don't realize how heavy and consistent that is. So yeah, part of the exercise is to really explore for those that get to attend the retreat. For those that don't, at least you can start to even contemplate how are you being hard on yourself, being angry at yourself, and how is that depleting your energy that you have each day and finding healthy ways, because anger is a normal, healthy human emotion.
Yep.
That's something I think so many of us don't recognize, is that anger
is a normal. So is sadness. And we want to, as our society and our, sorry to interrupt, but we intertwine these, and in our minds, we have negative and positive emotions. And I wish we could just get rid of that. Like, happiness isn't necessarily a positive emotion and sadness a negative one. They're all just emotions that we're supposed to feel. And we're just told so often in our culture, in Western culture, that we only want to focus on the good emotions.
Yeah, feelings create flow. And if we don't feel our feelings, it's really hard to get into a flow state. And what I mean by a flow state is that moment, those moments when you're feeling synchronicity, things just fall into place. You can imagine anything happening better than what it was that it's happening in that moment. So feelings create flow. And if we restrict those feelings from flowing, then it creates a lot of discomfort and dis-ease in our system, in our body, in our muscle tissues, and creates tension. And so, there's a lot that we can support people with that get to come to us in person?
I'm listening to either, try a combination of factors, my son, the universe, fill in the blank, but somebody wants me to hear this message of fight or flow, because you're the second guest in the last 2 weeks that I've spoken to in the healing realm that uses the term fight or flow. So exactly. And it was the gentleman I spoke to regarding plant medicine that was using it. He's a veteran and PTSD survivor and has started a company around that. But he was talking about fight versus flow, right? And when we remain in flight, all the disease and harm that comes to us versus learning to get to the flow. And he used those exact same words. So somebody's speaking and I'm listening. That's all I have to say. So I would like, as we wrap this up and have given everybody a basic snapshot of what to expect, if you could tie this up by giving us a little bit of final words on hopeful thoughts or mindset that you would like to leave everybody that's listening with today.
Yeah, so something that's coming to mind right now, I talked quite a bit about just self-care. And so I think I covered that in the sense of how important that is as a baseline, as a foundation of taking care of yourself. But probably a form of self-care that most people aren't doing or aren't aware of is shifting out of the mindset of self-criticism. And one of the most powerful ways to begin to do that, especially if you're the type of person that receives a compliment and you just deflect the compliment and say, yeah, I could have done this and this better. If you're that type of person, then it's quite possible you have a pretty strong inner critic. And if you have a strong inner critic, the only way to start to give that inner critic a new role is to help that inner critic start to focus on what it can appreciate about you. And so by looking at a practice, especially before bed, if you have someone that you can do this with, even better. It's ideal if you can do it with someone witnessing you and then challenge them to do the same thing. But a self-care practice of self-appreciation. So what are a couple of things that you can appreciate about yourself today? And that starts to rewire that part of the brain that's so good at finding all the things that are wrong. And doing that before you go to sleep at night helps you tend to have better sleep and dreams that are more supportive instead of being heavy and dark. So I don't know, Melissa, if that's what you're looking for, but that would be my recommendation, is try to develop a self-care practice of appreciation. And it's important to say, I appreciate myself for. So we could do an example real quick, Melissa, like... Mm-hmm. I'm appreciating myself for taking the time today to be as present and as authentic as possible in our conversation so that it feels easeful and hopefully is informative and supportive to your guests. You open to doing a self-appreciation, Melissa?
I am. I will say that I appreciate myself for listening to the call that this was a need and being willing to go into something that initially was a little uncomfortable and a little scary for me. So I appreciate myself for the willingness to be open and work with somebody else to create an experience that moms will really take something impactful from.
Perfect. So those are two examples. I know that a lot of times your inner critic may say, oh, well, why are you appreciating yourself? You're just inflating your ego, blah, blah, blah. Like, just notice when those thoughts come up. That's why creating a self-appreciation practice is so important, because we tend to beat ourselves down, put ourselves down. And the self-appreciation practice is not about putting others down. It's really about helping give yourself some loving support. And so I find that at least 3 to 5 self-appreciations a day starts to help reset and rewire, where you might find it easier to also appreciate others. And so that's a simple, well, maybe not so simple for some. It takes practice. It took practice for me. But that is one suggestion that I have, especially if you're doing that before sleep.
Well, and I can only imagine, and I'm at this point promising that there will be part of that that's a part of our retreat, because you've referred to it as rewiring, reframing. I refer to it as narrative therapy, where we're rewriting narratives in our head. It's all the same thing. It's all the same thing. And it speaks directly to what moms need, whether they know they need it or not, and may not want it all the time, because like you said, it's hard. it's hard to say, I know I'm a good mom, and to give yourself mantras around that, because just rewiring that alone is huge. So it'll be some things to look forward to and some real promise that everybody's going to take away the ability to refocus and breathe and feel refreshed, and above all, to feel hopeful about their future and what that can look like, what their life can look like now in what I call the after. So I appreciate this so very much. I'm so looking forward to putting this episode and letting more people know about the retreat. My community knows, and it's started to trickle out a little bit into the podcast, but this will be the big introduction into my podcast community. And I'm so, so honored to be doing this with you, and so thankful for the time that we spent together today, Yancey. Thank you so much.
Likewise, Melissa, I'm looking forward to supporting you and all your wonderful guests that are coming. And I look forward to meeting everybody in July.
Yeah, me too. Me too, Yancey. And anybody that wants information, they can go to my website, but in my show notes, which are usually pretty extensive, I will put all the ways to get in contact with Casa Alterna Vida. Should they be interested in anything else that you do or other retreats, this retreat, they can contact me, because that's where you would direct them anyway, as far as to, I know you're going to do some form of an intake. I'm doing the same thing and meeting with the ladies that sign up. So nobody will be in the dark. They can reach out to me about this retreat, or feel free to go to the Casa Alterna Vida's website to look at all of the other wonderful things they do. And until we can speak again next time, sir, I hope we talk soon.
Thanks, Melissa. Have a great day.
You too. Grievers, it is my hope that from today, you will take that which serves you and simply leave the rest. I would love to connect with you, and the best way to do that is to start out on my website, where the first thing you'll find is a video recorded message from me. And then from there, you can find everything I offer: the online Zoom support groups, the books I've written, ways to connect for the podcast, and an entire resource library assembled to help all suicide loss grievers find the resources that they need to help them along their healing journey. Please go to theleftoverpieces.com. From there, I hope that we can connect, and I hope that you too can discover that we truly are better together. If anything that you've heard in today's episode resonates with you, I would ask that you please subscribe to get notified every week of my new episodes. And then take a moment to rate and review me on Apple Podcasts so that more grievers like us can find this podcast and this community. It is from my own experience of finding myself sitting amid the leftover pieces of my own shattered heart that I can tell you that while it seems impossible in the early days, it is possible to put those pieces back together and be okay again. And every week, we'll be right here providing more comfort, hope, and community. So until next week, I'll sign off today with some words from one of my Alex's favorites, Peter Pan. Never say goodbye, because goodbye means going away, and going away means forgetting. Grievers, no one here is forgetting. Talk soon.